A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's thinking about asynchronous communication tools, specifically screen recordings for knowledge transfer across time zones. He's been doing remote project work, and he's convinced that periodic in-person meetings matter. But the day-to-day async stuff is where things break down. His core question is practical. What tools are out there beyond Loom that can handle screen recording with annotations, work across platforms including Linux, and crucially, be self-hosted or at least give you real control over your data? He's worried about locking project explanations inside a sauce silo, and he wants proper export, backup, and authentication that isn't just security by obscurity. So it's a tools plus practices question.
This is exactly the kind of thing I love digging into, because the space has actually shifted a lot in the last couple years. And the Linux point Daniel raises is not trivial. Loom's Linux story has been spotty since forever, and they've basically acknowledged it's not a priority. By the way, DeepSeek V4 Pro is writing our script today.
Good to know. So where do we start? The self-hosting angle or the platform question?
Let's do both, because they're connected. The core tension Daniel's pointing at is real. If you're a consultant or a small team producing these screen recordings as project documentation, those videos are assets. They're not disposable Slack messages. You want them indexed, searchable, archived. You want to know that in 3 years, when a client comes back asking about a decision you walked through in a recording, you can still pull it up. And that means you either need a tool that gives you real data portability, or you host it yourself.
The security by obscurity line he threw in, that's worth pausing on. Unlisted YouTube links, private Vimeo embeds, those work until they don't. Someone shares the link leaks, and suddenly your internal project walkthrough is findable. It's not that YouTube's infrastructure is insecure. It's that the access model is fundamentally the wrong shape for this kind of work.
The threat model for a consultant sharing screen recordings isn't someone will brute force the URL. It's someone will forward the link. And that's a social problem that authentication solves, not a cryptographic one. So Daniel's instinct that you want actual authentication on these things is correct.
Let's talk about what's out there. You've been digging into this?
Yeah, I spent some time mapping the landscape. The first thing to understand is that the async video space has bifurcated. You've got the Loom-style tools that are optimized for quick, ephemeral communication. Record, get a link, share it, move on. Those tools treat video like a message. Then you got the documentation-focused tools that treat video like a document. They emphasize organization, search, annotations, versioning. Daniel's use case is squarely in that second camp.
Loom, for all its polish, is very much in the first camp. The link expires eventually on free tiers. The organizational model is basically a feed, and exporting your content in bulk is not what they're built for.
So if we're looking at alternatives that fit Daniel's criteria, cross-platform including Linux, self-hosting or strong data control, proper authentication, there are a few names that come up consistently. The one that's probably the strongest contender for self-hosted async video right now is Screenity.
That's the browser extension, right?
Yeah, and it's open source. It's a Chrome extension. Works on any Chromium browser, so that covers Linux, Windows, Mac, and it does screen recording with annotations, Zoom, drawing tools, webcam overlay, all of that. But the key thing is, it's not a platform. It's a recording tool. It gives you the video file. What you do with that file, where you host it, how you authenticate access, that's on you. So it solves the recording side of Daniel's problem beautifully, but it doesn't solve the distribution side.
Which is actually the harder problem. Recording your screen is the easy part. Getting that recording in front of the right person with the right access controls in a way that doesn't require them to download a 4 GB file, that's the infrastructure challenge.
That's where PeerTube comes in. PeerTube is a federated, self-hosted video platform. Think of it as a decentralized YouTube. You can run your own instance, upload videos, organize them into channels, and crucially, you can set videos to be private or password protected. It supports WebTorrent for distribution, so you're not crushing your own server bandwidth. And because it's ActivityPub compatible, people can follow your video channels from other Fediverse platforms.
I've run PeerTube. The interface is decent, not YouTube polished, but functional. The password protected video feature works. The thing I'd flag is that it's not a lightweight setup. You're running a Node.js application with a PostgreSQL database, Redis for job queuing, and you need to handle transcoding. If you upload a video in some weird format, PeerTube will transcode it to web-friendly formats using FFmpeg, but that takes CPU and time.
That's the trade-off Daniel needs to weigh. Self-hosting video is not like self-hosting a notes app. Video is heavy, transcoding is computationally expensive, storage adds up. If you're producing a couple hours of screen recordings a week, you're looking at real storage costs and real processing overhead. It's totally doable. I've seen people run PeerTube on a Hetzner dedicated server with a couple terabytes of storage, and it hums along fine. But you have to go in knowing it's not a set it and forget it thing.
The other approach, and I think this might be more practical for a consultant, is to separate the recording tool from the hosting platform. Use something like Screenity or OBS to produce the recording, then upload it to a platform that handles the heavy lifting but still gives you data control.
OBS is worth mentioning as the gold standard for screen recording on Linux. It's what streamers use, but it's also fantastic for producing clean screen recordings. You can set up scenes, switch between your webcam and your screen, add overlays. The learning curve is steeper than Loom. You have to understand bit rates and encoders and output formats, but the control is absolute, and it's free and open source.
The output from OBS is just a file on your disk, which brings us back to the hosting question. What else is there beyond PeerTube for hosting with access control?
There's a category of tools that sit between fully self-hosted video platform and throw it on YouTube. One that's gotten interesting in the last year is called Twik. It's a self-hosted video sharing platform specifically built for Teams. It supports private sharing links, password protection, and it's got a clean interface. It's written in Go, so it's relatively lightweight compared to PeerTube. No federation, no WebTorrent. It's simpler, more focused.
Go apps tend to be easier to deploy. Single binary, minimal dependencies. That's appealing if you don't want to babysit a whole stack.
Another one in that vein is called Streamable, but that's not self-hosted. For self-hosted, there's also Media Goblin, which is a GNU project. It's been around for years, supports video and audio and images, and it's built with federation in mind. But honestly, development has been slow. It works, but it feels like a project from 2018.
I think the practical recommendation here depends on what Daniel's actual volume looks like. If he's producing a handful of recordings a month and needs them archived and accessible with authentication, PeerTube on a modest VPS is probably the most robust answer. If he's producing more and needs lower friction, the calculus changes.
That's where the commercial self-hosted or self-hostable options come in. There's a company called Vimeo that offers a self-hosted-ish option, Vimeo OTT, but that's overkill and expensive. More interesting for Daniel's use case is a tool called ScreenJar.
I haven't used that one.
It's relatively new. It's a Loom alternative that's built for customer support and async documentation, but the key thing is they offer a self-hosted deployment option. It's not open source. It's a commercial license, but you can run it on your own infrastructure. It handles recording through a browser extension, annotations, viewer analytics, all of that. And because it's self-hosted, you control the data. The downside, it's not free, and the self-hosted tier is aimed at teams, so the pricing might be steep for a solo consultant.
That's the landscape, right? The open-source self-hosted options require more setup and maintenance. The commercial self-hosted options cost money but reduce the operational burden. Daniel's basically choosing which pain he prefers, infrastructure pain or subscription pain.
There's a third option, which is the one I think a lot of consultants actually land on. Use a tool that's not self-hosted but gives you robust export and data portability so you're not locked in. If the platform disappears tomorrow, you've got your files.
Which tools actually deliver on that?
There's a tool called Zeit. It used to be called Cloud App, and it does screen recording, GIF creation, annotations, all of that. The export situation is better than Loom's. You can bulk download your content, and they've got an API that lets you pull your data programmatically. It's not self-hosted, but the data portability story is stronger. They support Mac, Windows, and there's a web version that works on Linux, though the native Linux app doesn't exist.
The web version on Linux, is it actually functional for screen recording?
It depends on the browser. On Chrome or Brave, you can do screen capture through the web API, and it works reasonably well. You don't get system audio capture on Linux through the browser. That's a limitation of how Linux handles audio. But for recording a screen with a voiceover through your microphone, it works.
That system audio limitation on Linux is worth flagging for Daniel specifically. If he's recording a walkthrough of a software tool, and he wants to capture the audio from that tool, notification sounds, playback, whatever, the browser-based screen recording APIs on Linux won't capture that. He'd need a native tool like OBS.
And that's actually one of those details that doesn't show up in marketing pages. You find out 3 hours into trying to make something work.
Let's talk about the annotation piece, because Daniel specifically mentioned it. He wants to layer in video, annotations, Zoom. That's not just recording. That's a post-production workflow, and that changes the tool choice.
Yeah, annotations are interesting because they mean different things in different tools. Loom does lightweight annotations. You can draw on the screen while recording, and you can add comments after the fact, but it's not a full video editor. If Daniel wants to add callout boxes, arrows that appear at specific timestamps, text overlays, that's moving into video editing territory.
Video editing is a whole different time investment. The promise of async screen recording tools is that you hit record, you talk through something, you hit stop, and you share the link. If you're spending 20 minutes annotating a 5-minute recording, you've lost the efficiency gain.
There's a balance. For project documentation, I think light annotations are worth it. Circling a specific button, adding a text note that says, "This is the config file that changed," because they make the recording skimmable. Someone watching 6 months later can jump to the annotated sections and get the key points without watching the whole thing. But heavy post-production defeats the purpose.
What tools handle light annotations well, without requiring a full video editor?
Screenity does in-browser annotations. You can draw, add text, highlight areas, but it's all during recording, not post-production. For post-recording annotations, there's a tool called Descript that's worth mentioning, though it's not self-hosted. Descript treats video as a transcript-first medium. You edit the transcript, and it edits the video accordingly. You can add annotations, highlights, chapter markers. It's very much in the video as document paradigm that Daniel's describing.
Their data portability?
You can export the video, the transcript, the audio, all standard formats. But the project file itself, with all the annotations and edits, is in their proprietary format. So you can get your content out, but you can't migrate your project to another tool. That's the lock-in trade-off.
That's probably acceptable for a consultant. If Descript disappeared, you'd still have the finished videos and transcripts. You'd lose the ability to re-edit, but that's a manageable risk.
And Descript's transcription quality is genuinely good. They use their own models, and accuracy for English is above 95% for clear audio. That matters because searchable transcripts are one of the best ways to make screen recordings useful long-term. Daniel mentioned indexing and archiving. A full-text transcript that's timestamped to the video is the most powerful indexing tool you can have.
That's a point worth dwelling on. The reason video as document is compelling isn't just about organization. It's about retrieval. If I'm a consultant and a client asks me 6 months later, "What did we decide about the API authentication flow?" I don't want to scrub through a 40-minute recording. I want to search for authentication and jump to the relevant section. Without that, the archive is just a pile of files.
That's where the self-hosting ecosystem has a gap. PeerTube doesn't do transcription. MediaGoblin doesn't do transcription. You'd need to bolt on something like Whisper. OpenAI's speech recognition model as a separate step. There are tools that do this. You could set up a workflow where you record with OBS, transcribe with Whisper, and host on PeerTube with the transcript embedded in the description or as a subtitle track. But now you're building a pipeline, not using a tool.
Daniel's prompt was pretty clear. He doesn't want to spend more time figuring out how to stream video with authentication than he spends actually making the recordings. So the pipeline approach has to be weighed against the just-use-descript and accept the SaaS dependency approach.
There's a middle ground that I think is under-discussed. It's possible to use a SaaS tool for creation and a self-hosted platform for distribution. Record with Descript or Loom or whatever works, download the finished video, upload to PeerTube or Twix. You get the best creation experience and the data sovereignty on the back end. The cost is an extra upload step.
That extra step is not nothing, though. Part of what makes Loom work is that the recording is uploaded during recording. By the time you hit stop, the link is ready. If you're recording, waiting for export, then uploading to a separate platform, you've added several minutes to your workflow. For one recording, that's fine. For 10 a week, it adds up.
And it's worth naming explicitly. The reason Loom won is that they collapsed the entire pipeline into one action. Record, stop, link copied to clipboard. Every step you add after that is friction, and friction is the enemy of documentation. If it's too annoying, you'll do it less often, and then the archive doesn't get built.
The question becomes, what's the minimum viable pipeline that gives Daniel data control without making him hate the process?
I think the answer might be something like Screenity for recording, with automatic upload to an S3-compatible object store, which you can self-host with Minio, or use something like Backblaze B2, and then a simple web front end that lists recordings with password protection. That's not a product. It's an afternoon of configuration. But once it's set up, the workflow is hit record in Screenity, stop recording, the file saves to a watched folder, a script uploads it to your object store, and you get a link you can share.
That's a Rube Goldberg machine. It works until it doesn't. Some dependency updates, the upload script breaks, you don't notice for 2 weeks, and suddenly your client is asking why the link is dead.
That's the real tension. Self-hosting gives you control, but it also gives you responsibility. And for a solo consultant, being the person responsible for keeping the video infrastructure alive is a distraction from the actual consulting work. That's why Loom can charge what they charge. You're paying to not think about it.
Daniel's point about strategic choice is worth taking seriously. If your project documentation is locked in the SaaS platform, you've made a bet that the platform will be around and will maintain reasonable pricing and will keep your data accessible. For a big company with a procurement department, that's a manageable risk. For a solo consultant, it's a single point of failure.
It's not just about the platform disappearing. It's about pricing changes, feature removal, terms of service updates. I've seen multiple tools in this space get acquired and then slowly decay. Cloud App became Zeit and changed its pricing model. Loom got acquired by Atlassian in 2023 for almost $1 billion, and while it's still running, the product direction now serves Atlassian's ecosystem. Jira integration, Confluence embedding. If you're not in that ecosystem, you're not the priority.
The Atlassian acquisition is actually a perfect case study. Loom's founders sold for $975 million. The product isn't going away, but its roadmap is now aligned with Atlassian's enterprise suite. For a consultant who just wants clean screen recordings with annotations, that might mean the features they care about stagnate while the team builds deeper Jira integration.
That's the pattern. Tools that serve independent professionals get acquired and reoriented toward enterprise. It's not malicious, it's just where the money is. But it means the tool you chose 3 years ago might not be the tool you have today.
If we're giving Daniel a concrete recommendation, what do we actually say?
I think there are three tiers. Tier 1, lowest friction, accept the SaaS dependency, use Descript. Its transcription-first approach is the best fit for video as document, and the export options are good enough that you're not completely locked in. You're betting on Descript's continued existence, but the content is extractable. Tier 2, self-hosted but opinionated, ScreenJar self-hosted plan, if the pricing works. You get a polished recording and sharing experience, you control the data, and you're not building infrastructure. The trade-off is cost and the fact that it's not open source, so you're still dependent on a vendor, just one that lets you run the software yourself.
Tier 3, fully open source, full control, Screenity plus PeerTube. Screenity handles the recording with annotations. PeerTube handles the hosting with authentication. You'll need to manage a server and handle transcoding, but you own the whole stack. Add Whisper for transcription if you want searchability.
There's actually a tier 4 that I want to mention, which is the just use a wiki approach. If Daniel's primary goal is knowledge transfer and archiving, video might not always be the right medium. A lot of project documentation works better as written documentation with screenshots. Tools like Bookstack or wiki.js are self-hosted, support rich media embedding, and give you full-text search out of the box. You can embed screen recordings where they add value, but the backbone is text.
That's a good pushback. Video is great for showing process. Here's how you configure this setting. But it's terrible for reference. Nobody wants to watch a video to find a specific configuration value. The ideal system probably uses video for walkthroughs and text for reference docs, with the two cross-linked.
That's exactly what the best internal documentation teams do. Video for onboarding and complex procedures, text for reference, and quick lookup. The video is embedded in the documentation page, not floating in a separate video library.
One answer to Daniel's prompt might be, don't try to solve the video hosting problem in isolation. Solve the documentation problem and treat video as one component of that.
Which brings us back to practices, which Daniel also asked about. The tool is only as good as the practice around it. A screen recording that's titled Untitled Final V2.mp4 and uploaded to a generic folder is not useful documentation, no matter what platform it's on.
Naming conventions, metadata, consistent structure. This is the unsexy part that makes everything else work. If you're recording a project walkthrough, the file should be named something like Project Name Feature Date.mp4. It should have a written summary in the description, and it should be linked from the relevant project documentation page. Do that consistently for a year, and you've built something valuable. Skip it, and you've built a pile of mystery files.
The summary is critical for search. Even if you have automated transcription, a human-written summary that captures the decisions made and the key points is more useful than a raw transcript. It takes 2 minutes to write, and it pays off every time someone needs to find that recording later.
There's also the question of when to record versus when to write. Daniel mentioned that async communication can feel impersonal, and I think that's a real consideration. A screen recording with your face in the corner and your voice explaining something, that's more personal than a written doc. It conveys tone, emphasis, the little asides that build trust. For sensitive or complex topics, that matters.
The webcam overlay is important for exactly that reason. It's not vanity. It's about maintaining the human connection that Daniel values from those periodic in-person meetings. A faceless screen recording is better than nothing, but a recording where I can see your face and hear your voice is closer to the experience of sitting next to you.
That connects to the recognition point Daniel raised. Remote workers feeling valued, part of that is being seen and heard, not just processed asynchronously through tickets and pull requests. A thoughtful screen recording where someone takes the time to explain context and rationale, not just output. That's a form of respect.
The medium shapes the message. A Slack message that says done, see the PR is efficient but cold. A 5-minute recording that walks through the PR, explains the trade-offs, and asks for specific feedback. That's collaborative. It takes more time to create, but it saves time in misunderstanding and back and forth.
What's the bottom line for Daniel?
For tools, Descript if you're okay with SaaS and want the best video as document experience. ScreenJar self-hosted if you want data control with minimal infrastructure pain. Screenity plus PeerTube if you want full open source sovereignty and are willing to manage a server. And for practices, name your files consistently, write 2-sentence summaries, embed recordings in a searchable documentation system, and keep your face in the recording to maintain the human connection.
On the Linux point specifically, OBS is the reliable native option. Screenity works well through Chrome. And for anything browser-based, be aware of the system audio limitation. If capturing system audio on Linux matters, go native.
One more thing I want to add about the authentication question. Daniel said he doesn't want to rely on security by obscurity, and he's right. But the practical solution for most consultants is simpler than setting up a full authentication system. Use expiring links or password-protected pages. PeerTube supports password protection natively. Even a simple HTTP basic auth in front of an Nginx directory listing is better than an unlisted YouTube link. It's not elegant, but it works, and it's trivial to set up.
HTTP. Basic auth over HTTPS is fine for this use case. You're not protecting state secrets. You're keeping project documentation from being casually accessible. A strong password shared through a separate channel is sufficient.
If you want something slightly more polished, Cloudflare Access or Tailscale Funnel can put authentication in front of any self-hosted service without requiring you to build it yourself. Tailscale Funnel in particular is interesting. It exposes a service on your Tailscale network to the public internet with authentication, and it handles the TLS termination. You point it at your PeerTube instance or your simple file server, and now you've got authenticated access without managing certificates or off logic.
Tailscale Funnel is one of those tools that feels like cheating. You run one command, and suddenly your local service is on the internet with a valid certificate and authentication. For a consultant who doesn't want to be a sysadmin, that's a huge unlock.
The caveat is that Funnel is designed for sharing with a few people, not for public distribution. But for Daniel's use case, sharing project recordings with specific clients or team members, it's a perfect fit.
We've covered the tools, the practices, the Linux gotchas, and the authentication question. I think the only thing we haven't addressed is the in-person meeting point Daniel raised at the start.
Right, he said periodic in-person meetings are important for making remote work feel less impersonal. I think that's well established at this point. The research consistently shows that remote teams benefit from occasional in-person gatherings, not for productivity. Remote work is often more productive, but for trust, relationship building, and the kind of serendipitous problem solving that happens over coffee. The question is how async video fits into that.
I'd argue async video is the bridge between those in-person gatherings. You have the quarterly off-site, where you build relationships and align on big-picture stuff. Then between those, you use thoughtful async communication, including screen recordings, to maintain the collaborative feel. Without that bridge, the off-site becomes a reset button that you're slamming every quarter, and the weeks in between feel transactional.
That's a good way to frame it. The in-person meetings set the relational foundation, and the async videos maintain it. If you're just firing off text messages between off-sites, the connection degrades. If you're sending recordings where your colleagues can see your face and hear your voice, you're reinforcing the relationship.
Daniel's point about bringing people in from other countries at a once a quarter or twice a year frequency, that's actually practical. The cost of flying someone in for a week is real, but amortized over 3 or 6 months of better collaboration, it's almost certainly worth it. The async tools make the time between visits productive. The visits make the async communication warmer.
The combination is more powerful than either alone. Fully remote with no in-person contact tends to produce what researchers call collaboration decay. People drift into silos, misunderstandings compound, trust erodes. Fully in-person isn't practical for distributed teams. The hybrid approach, mostly async with periodic intensive in-person gatherings, is where the best results seem to land.
That's essentially what Daniel described. He's already arrived at the right model. His question was about the tools to make the async part work better, and I think we've given him a pretty thorough map. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The average cumulus cloud weighs about 1.1 million pounds, roughly the same as 100 elephants, yet it floats because its weight is spread across millions of tiny water droplets, each so small that air resistance keeps them aloft.
100 elephants floating over our heads.
I'll never look at a cloud the same way.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. If you want more episodes, find us at myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back with another one soon.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear. Until next time. time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.